Members are present.
As are all planning commissioners here and ready to go.
All right. Now, our newest member here is John. So, John, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, this is a special meeting, and we're going to try and wrap it all up by 8 o'clock. So, with that in mind, we're going to limit our own comments and public comments to the extent that we can. Are there only three people that want to speak at public comment? Does anybody else in the audience want to speak? Okay, then I am going to go ahead and give you your 3 minutes, and then we will get to our deliberations, okay? So, please come forward.
Good evening. My name is David Weissman, and I'm speaking this evening on behalf of the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility. And I'd like to address an item you have under new business, which is a recommendation of consideration of support of Assembly Bill 42 of Sam Blakesley in the California Legislature.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's going to be at our city council meeting.
Oh.
Not at the joint meeting. Can you?
Where it was located. So we believe Dr. Blakesley's on the right track with this bill. You, as a city council, supported his previous bill, AB 1632, which led to the study that led to the discovery of this fault. So this is just sort of an ongoing expression of support, and I thank you for expediting that, and will provide any further backup in addition to what's already been emailed to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Do either of the people that just arrived want to make a public comment? Because we're going to limit them on the number of people. And we got another person just came in. If you want to make a public comment, you need to be over there, and I am going to have to make it 2 minutes each now. And we'll hold to that.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. Good evening, Madam Chairwoman, members of the Planning Commission. My name is John Barta, and I'd like to speak briefly about FAR. What I see is... Well, the old expression, we had to bomb the village to save it, comes to mind. FAR is, in effect, a downzoning of residential property in town. That's what it really is. I mean, you put neighborhood compatibility, all these other names on it, but what you're really doing is telling people that what they thought they could build on their property, they can build something less there now. And that is a de facto downzoning. And when you downzone property, you change the value of the property. And I've communicated with, I believe, all of you, and so you should have some idea of my opinion on that. So I won't dig too deeply into that, but the point of it is that when you change the zoning, everybody's property suffers immediately once the zoning goes into effect. How does that compare to the benefit, the so-called benefit of FAR? The benefit of FAR will affect only some homes that are built in the community in the future. Right now, I believe there's been one or two permits issued so far this year, that's all. So maybe 10 homes a year might be affected by this. So the negative impact will be immediate. It will be citywide. You know, it especially affects people in smaller, older homes whose resale values will go down as a result of it. But the benefit will be maybe 10 homes a year. And in over a 25-year period, you know, that might be 250 homes in a town of 5,500 structures. So over 25 years, and by the way, you know, let's be honest. Okay, 25 years from now, all of us probably will not be here, or we won't care if we are here. And so the effect is on one home in 20, okay, over 25 years. That's the so-called benefit that people are touting. It's a tiny benefit as they see it, by the way. Others don't see it that way, and I'm sure, you know, I've made you all aware of that. Anyway, thank you very much, and good luck with your evening.
Thank you.
He took the pencil. There's no pencil. Anyhow, my name is Dorothy Cutter. It's almost 2 years since the first citizens' workshop where people wanted to change the zoning to protect people's homes from large houses on small lots that have deprived people of their view, their light and air. And a lot of those houses have been built. Anyhow, we have a citizen's ordinance that is quite comprehensive, and a lot of people worked on it. And I would urge you to start holding public hearings and start. That's a beginning and can go from there. I don't see why you have to wait 2 years for the staff to do it. Now is a very good time. There aren't a lot of things in the pipeline. And to address Mr. Barter, he is only looking at it from one side. He's totally ignoring all those people in small houses that have been negatively impacted by the large houses. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the Council, and members of the Planning Commission. My name's Jane Heath. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I am a real property owner. I'm here tonight to urge the Planning Commission and the Council to direct staff to look at the draft floor area ratio ordinance that has been researched by local citizens. I've heard it said that addressing the disconnect between the general plan goals and the current zoning is something favored only by a vocal majority. A minority. That's not my experience. In the past 2 years, and in particular while walking neighborhoods in Morro Bay in the last election, almost everyone I spoke with had something to say about buildings in their neighborhood that did not address the community pattern and character as the general plan goal number 5 requires. Current zoning concentrates only on footprint and setbacks, and therefore inadvertently probably encourages those who want to maximize square feet to build boxes. I'm not afraid at looking at what concerned citizens have spent hundreds of hours researching and asking the Morro Bay planning professionals to review. I would ask that they keep an open mind and
Good evening, Mayor and staff. My name is Bill Black. I don't know this is what to say about all this. It's very confusing to me, but I will agree with what John said 100%. I will tell you this, that first of all, people may say it's funny that I'm up here talking against FAR when I have a square house. Well, I read my electric meter yesterday on my square house. I'm 2,450 kilowatt hours in reverse. April the 7th, next week, will be my 3-year anniversary of that system running. So if more homes in Morro Bay had electric solar panels on the roof, we would become a real big generating electrical company just in itself. So my neighbors are all getting electricity and paying for it that I have generated and put back in the system for free. Besides that, my house, my heating system downstairs has not gone on this year. Last year, we were freezing the avocado trees out here in the orchard. It went on for 3 hours. Why? Because the house is built far superior to the minimum building standards that the city requires. Real simple. The technology is there. When I went in for my permit, I didn't ask for one variance. I went right by the code book. I built the house for me and my wife and my children to come up here and enjoy themselves. They come up 4 or 5 times a year. They love the house. I put an elevator in it. So if I get crippled or my feet get any worse, I can go upstairs and go to bed at night, not to sleep downstairs on the couch. So to let people come before you, by the way, a small amount of people that have very large homes in Morro Bay make my house look like a guest quarters, to be actual, in my opinion. People that have a small lot can only put a footprint on it of a certain percentage. That's already established. So then to have all these other things and rules added into it, it's just going to make things worse and worse all the time. If you lower the value of my property value, of my home, I'm going to be upset. I'm going to remember who voted for it, and I'm going to do all I can to see they do not get reelected. I don't know if there are any legal ramifications for lowering the price of people's homes, but I think that's really bad to do. We need the money. This city needs all the money they can get. Any questions?
Thank you. I'm sorry. Is that working, Christine? Because I can't hear it.
No, it's not working.
If the buzzer's working.
I didn't see a light bulb in front.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. We'll bring it back to the Commission and the Council. What we've done, we have 7 topics that we're going to discuss tonight.
And they are in order: neighborhood compatibility standards, environmental incentives to promote green building and planning in the application and approval process, downtown visioning, extent of architectural review by the Planning Commission, lot splitting, need for lobbying efforts with the Coastal Commission on the general plan, and newspaper racks, especially on the Embarcadero. Those are the topics. What I've asked, and most everyone was able to do, and I really appreciate it because I know some of you didn't get it until today, was to submit a quick couple of sentences on how you felt on these issues so that we could find out if there was any consensus and then be able to really discuss some of the items in depth where there is more discussion needed. So I did go through them all before I came to the meeting, and just want to kind of start with the ones that seem to be, and we all seem to be in agreement on. And the first one with that is the number 6, need for lobbying efforts with the Coastal Commission on the general plan. We had started to send them letters on a monthly basis. We were told that that might be irritating staff and could work against us instead of for us, so we kind of pulled back on that. Everyone agrees we need to do something. If you'd like to just offer some ideas or suggestions on what that might be that we could do that wouldn't affect us negatively, let's go around the table and just see if there's anything that anybody wants to suggest on that. Okay? John, we'll start with you. And she is going to put the buzzer on it a minute. I'm not going to shut you up, but please wrap up as quick as you can after the buzzer goes off, okay?
I'll be quick. The only idea I have here is that I do know Coastal Commission will be in San Luis Obispo holding their meeting in July, and that's a good opportunity for us and the community to go down there, express our concerns before the entire board and with staff present. And also an opportunity for some of us possibly to engage Mr. Douglas and others while they're in town.
I'll just concur with John on that. I think we need to do what we can, but without irritating them.
Yeah, I concur as well. I just recall Mr. Ambo repeatedly telling us that there were things that we would like to try to do on certain projects that we could if our new ordinance was in place. So I think it hurts us every time it's delayed.
I think if I tried to put a fire under those folks, I would call up Cacho first and see what he has to say. And he's our representative on the board, and I think that maybe he could give us some suggestions how to light a fire under staff. I would write at least email each of the commissioners on what our issues are, and we've had our GPLCP in their hands for over 5 years. And we have a real need for it. And I think you can't go to staff any longer. Staff is stonewalling you. I think you have to go to that body of which tells staff what to do and where their priorities are. And so I think you have to go to the commission itself.
I have to agree with everything that the Planning Commission members have said so far. We're really strapped. A lot of things come up that we need to deal with, and we don't have the regulations to work with. We need to go beyond staff, I think, at this point. We need to find out, without irritating anybody, well, maybe they need to be irritated a little bit, I don't know, but they need to get moving on this issue and get our information back to us.
Okay. I'm going to skip me and I'll do the wrap-up.
Well, I don't think we can afford a member or two that would be willing to take the lead on that when the Coastal Commission isn't in town, or if we'd like to be decentralized about our approach with that effort.
Well, it doesn't leave much for me to say at the end here. Other than my question, and I guess I'm going to ask it because it was the question I asked on my paper, was I don't even know at this point if the Coastal Commission has deemed our application complete. I don't even know the answer to that. I know that they kept sending it back, telling them that we needed to send more information. So I don't know if that's a question for Mr. Ambo or our city manager or who could answer that, please. Could you tell me if it is complete?
I'll start, and Bruce can finish up. Our understanding is that they have let us know that they are beginning to look at it. They have an electronic copy of it, and they are looking at it. That's the latest information I know. Maybe Bruce can follow up from that.
Yes, and I physically hand-delivered about 30 pounds of materials to them, and it was complete. They've indicated they wanted to see our stormwater master plan. They had indicated they wanted to see our our municipal code, and that was not what we amended the last time our document was certified. We disagree on that. We gave them what they're allowed to review. They wanted to review more than what they felt they were entitled. They wanted to review more than, in our opinion, what they were entitled to. But we gave them the record of all of the decision, as we normally do with all of these applications. So it's been our position that it's been complete from the minute they got it. But I agree with the city manager. We've also agreed to say, fine, if you really are interested in advancing the goals and principles of the Coastal Act, give us the document back so that we can send it through our review process and then review that, and we can haggle over whether or not you think you got what you received in the first place. But so they've committed that they'll just give us the document, because there's a year or two work just to do the document itself without getting into this concept of what you thought you're entitled to review. And we gave them all the information in the record.
Okay, so it sounds like what we'd like to do then is send an update letter to the staff, contact Cacho, or maybe copy him with that letter, and certainly make an appearance at their meeting when they are local. Does that sound good to everyone? Okay, so that then will be the direction. I will make that a motion that we direct staff to. We'll send him a letter, we'll copy Cacho, and then on our own we will attend the meeting.
And what's the intent of the letter?
To ask them, well, to restate our position, that we feel that it is complete. We would appreciate their getting it back to us as quickly as possible, either in piece or in total, so that we can start reviewing it again. Yes.
John, do you know how long they're going to be here?
I believe their meetings are just for the day.
A couple of days.
3 days? They're 3 days? Oh, okay. My mistake. So they'll be spending the night. You'll have an opportunity to take someone out to dinner.
Well, I wouldn't mind an opportunity to get some face, like a little
and
informal FaceTime.
We've done that.
I think that's real important.
We can certainly do that again. Okay. Do I hear a second to my motion?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay.
Do we vote on that?
Madam Mayor, just an extension
of the council direction, so I don't think you need to worry about it. Okay, yes.
Just an extension of that, if there are issues that the Planning Commission feel they're waiting on because of the coastal general plan, it seems to me that those things can be piecemealed through. If there are a recurrent burn our saddle, I think we need to take those aside and move those forward on their own.
Well, maybe that's something we can do with the letter, is say especially these issues which we would like to be able to use in our planning currently. So let's do that. Okay. All right, we got one done. This is good. Okay. The next thing that there didn't seem to be a whole lot of controversy about was the news racks. And there was a couple of suggestions for a consolidation bin that had been suggested once before, and it was supposed to be funded out of the Harbor Fund, and I actually don't remember that. And then also to copy Carmel or another court-upheld ordinance about racks. Does anyone know what that consolidation thing with the Harbor Fund was? Does anybody remember that? I think, Bill, you brought it up.
Yeah, I remember it well. Harbor Commission instructed Rick to do that, and then I think Rick brought it to the council, and you took action for Rob to create an ordinance to accomplish that.
And then what happened was
I think it was on Rob's back burner and never done. And I think that it's a very simple thing, and I don't know why you need an ordinance.
It's not a simple thing. Apparently, Paso Robles was sued, and they lost because they tried to do that. It's a free speech issue, and it's very complex. So that was my feeling, was if we can find a city who has had a court challenge that they have succeeded, that we can copy that one. Otherwise, it is treading new legal ground.
Oh.
So
well,
that,
I didn't know that. I
issue.
Figured it was a slam dunk of buying one if you give us the green light.
Okay. Cool. All right. So I guess we should have a motion for that, too.
One question, please.
Yeah.
Bill, what's the cost of that?
We aren't sure. We think they're around $3,000. Pardon?
$3,000, you said?
Yes.
Per bin?
Yes, but it's consolidated. It's got something like 20 different boxes in it.
So you would use one per how big an area?
Per throwaway or article or newspaper or catalog.
Okay.
Nothing's cheap.
Wait a minute. Does that mean, like, for every one of those little things that sits out across from Dorn's, you'd have to have a $3,000 bin?
No.
No, you'd have a box and a $3,000 bin.
Okay. That's what I thought. Thank you.
It puts them all together.
Yeah,
but I will add, Monday morning, Morro Bay Beautiful has coffee at Dorn's. You look across the street, and I counted 18 bins there at Market and Morro Bay Boulevard.
There are a lot.
All right. So I believe the council motion then is to direct staff to, one, investigate the consolidation bin motion previously made about the Harbor Department, and also to check out Carmel's ordinance to see if that's something that we could borrow. We do need an ordinance. Yeah. May I hear a second to that?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Good. That's two. All right. Next thing was downtown visioning. This one may take a little more discussion, but basically the overall feeling was, yes, we want to do it. It is part of the redevelopment process. Should we go ahead now, start town hall meetings, things like that? So let's kind of go around the table and just get some thoughts on that. John, did you have something that you'd like to add on that one?
Only two questions, and is what if staff could give us a timeline, or if anyone knows the timeline of the redevelopment agency, just for my benefit, okay. And then also, does that include the power plant, or is it just the downtown area?
Okay. You want to come up and... You probably might want to stay here because we may have other questions coming around on this one.
Yes, Madam Mayor. We're supposed to get a rough draft in, I believe, May or perhaps June, and that's just the first phase, which is a feasibility study. And then they'll go to review, and the purpose of that is to see whether or not blight exists as defined in state law, economic, and then actual physical blight. And so once that study's completed, we'll have more to work with, and then we'll know if that'll be a council decision on whether or not they want to go forward. If we do go forward with the formal formation process, then part and parcel of that is developing the plan itself, and that would include visioning.
Okay, why don't you stay there?
The area that we recommended was nearly the entire the power plant is in there, and we included most of the areas along North Main Street. I would say probably at least 70% of the entire community. We thought it'd be more to be inclusive than exclusive, and they'll probably come back and tell us, whittle it down to what is more justifiable.
So is the business district in North Morro Bay included as well?
Yes, it is.
Bruce, why don't you stay there? I know I have a question. Other people might, too. Go ahead, sir.
Well, this is an issue that's dear to my heart. I think the redevelopment agency is critical, and I think that's a major tool. I don't think we really need to – I don't think we should wait for that to go through the process. We can set up design guidelines and pattern and use the ordinances from other cities to create the ordinance here. We can pattern it after cities that we like and that we approve of. Without creating design guidelines for downtown, the downtown area is never going to prosper. It's going to be a blighted area. It's not going to be a walkable, sustainable district. And I don't think Morro Bay will, can survive the revenue, not having the revenue from that area and the revenue that it could generate. So I would like to see some of the linkage with the Embarcadero. When I had a small study group to put together design guidelines, which I've given copies to the city council before, we had brought Jim Mall had brought forth visioning plans from 1954, and about every 10 to 15 years there'd be another visioning plan. I think we've got enough visioning plans out there. I think we know what we need to do. I think we need to get started on it.
I think it's critical that we have a thriving commercial, multiple commercial areas. And my only concern is how to most efficiently use the time that we have and knowing what documents we have when.
With the BID and Hotel Owners Association or in publicizing Morro Bay, it seems like a perfect time to seriously address this. Not that it hasn't been done before. Remember Rudat? The Neil Farrell ideas discussion last Thursday morning was a home run. The people in this city have a lot of great ideas on how to make it better. I keep hearing that our city is dingy, not dirty, dingy. I think that that is accurate. Try walking down Morro Bay Boulevard with a critical eye without wincing. Every Morro Bay Planning Department document set from time immemorial has a goal for the city to be pedestrian-friendly. We could start by requiring bulb outs at every downtown intersection unless there is a good reason not to. Bulb outs should shout out pedestrian-friendly, do not affect parking, look good, and make our city safer. And I could go on, but I'm out of time.
May I have your mic?
Yes.
I think in my written comments I said something to the effect that if we're going to do anything about redeveloping our downtown or our shopping areas, we need to do it while we still have them. If you look at Morro Bay Boulevard especially, or the little shopping malls up in North Morro Bay, they're in really serious, sad shape. With our beautiful new roundabout, it looks good coming into town. And then you go by the nice new Giancarlo's and the two buildings up there on Shasta and Morro Bay Boulevard, and it's looking good. And you get beyond that, and it gets worse and worse. I don't think we want to tear down the whole downtown and start over again, but I think we have a lot of plans out there. Just like Mr. Lohr said, it's been looked at over and over and over again. I think we need to get some public input. We need to get started so that when there's redevelopment money available, we're ready to move on it.
Rick?
I'm going to talk real fast because I got a lot to say right now. But before I do that, I just want to say you guys are the ultimate volunteers, and we all appreciate all the hard work that you do. We really do. That's very sincere. You do a great job. Michael mentioned it's critical that we need a thriving business area and the walkability problem, and I totally agree with those two things he says. I think at night after sunset, our downtown and Embarcadero in some spots appears dark, old, boring, and dead. Sometimes we talk about things and people say, oh, well, that looks like Carmel. Well, you know what? There's some things about Carmel that are pretty cool. One thing I like about Carmel is when you go there and you're walking down the streets, you feel very vibrant. There's a lot of little lights in the trees walking you and directing you kind of where to go. I would love to see something like that going down Morro Bay Boulevard and having the walkability direct you with that path of light down to the Embarcadero. And I'll leave it at that because my buzzer's ringing.
I think it's important to acknowledge the businesses that have tried to keep up as well as they can in this economy. I also think we need to acknowledge that the issue isn't always with the business owners, but with the landowners, and we know that there are some problems there in terms of absenteeism. I think that there's a lot to do, and I think almost everyone's agreed that we need to start now before rather than waiting for the, what's the thing called? That wasn't what I was thinking. The redevelopment agency.
I'm curious to know as to what sort of efforts have gone into coalescing the visioning and previous work that's gone into this. Obviously, there's been a lot of conversations through the years, and it seems like there's a similar thread through each of those studies. And to me, that would be a really good place for us to start. The other question that I have is, if we start this process now, can we do it in a way that would be compatible with the redevelopment agency conversation so that we're not going to be duplicating our efforts as we move through the redevelopment agency? And I think that's a question for Mr. Ambo, if there's specific things that we could do starting now that would start to work on our checklist with the redevelopment agency visioning and conversation.
I think it would be most efficient and productive to do it in the context of redevelopment and to have a facilitated meeting with resources, with expected outcomes, and have it structured in not just kind of an endless process. And the advantage to using the redevelopment process with it is that we're using a structured format and framework to work from. There are components to the plan, and there is participation involved in the formation of the agency and the district and the plan. And all of that coming together has an end result, and it has quite a bit
of the land use there in the future, and be ready to jump on those opportunities.
Well, I think along with the general plan, we still have to talk about the zoning ordinance, because then we talk about all our parking district areas there and where they break in that whole downtown section and the Embarcadero and all that, and the parking fees and the limitations that that's going to put on some of the merchants and potential businesses that come in, and the different fees that they're paying in the different areas. I think it ends up, I remember RUDAT, as Janice and Betty and a lot of other people here do, and the downtown visioning, all these great things we keep talking about, and that's how Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street got done, one block and a few areas of the Embarcadero. So it really comes back down to a partnership of the city, the landowners, and the business owners, and trying to move forward, but I think there's just so many components of it all, and it's how to put it all together and make it work, but there's just a lot of elements to this.
Okay, Bruce, my question is, when do you anticipate the redevelopment process getting to the point where we would have the town hall meetings on this topic and everything? How soon?
Excuse me. Yeah, you would have the feasibility study, and we'd open that up to hearings in hopefully May or June or the latest July. And at that point, we'll know if we have something to work with. And then if you decide to go forward with the process, you've expressed an interest in hitting the 2010 base year, then we would roll right into the formal formation process. So I would think within the next 3 months from there, we would need to start formulating the plan and doing. You'd be very busy. There's a lot.
Okay,
it's
so
not
it would
just,
be towards the end of this year that we would start the visioning process.
If we went forward, if you felt that we had enough to work with and went forward with the redevelopment plan formation process, yes, indeed.
And if we didn't go ahead with the redevelopment, we could still do the downtown visioning, and we could get to it this year. That's what I'm trying to determine.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's fair to say.
All right. So it seems to me we only want to move forward on this. The consensus seems to be do it as quickly as possible. Are we in agreement that it should wait until we get to the next step of the redevelopment process so that we're not spinning our wheels? Council?
Yes.
Yes?
Unless there are particular things that we can break out that would be worthwhile and would be compatible, as they are identified or not. And I think that there, Mr. Ambo's experience with redevelopment in the past and with qualified citizens that have facilitation abilities here, we could potentially start to work on our checklist for that if it felt like it was necessary. And again, the one place I think it may be is with the power plant.
Is it? Can you break things out, or does it have to go that in order of the process?
I think it might. I think it would be a better product if we took a comprehensive look at it in all regards. Not just the power plant property, just downtown, I mean, Morro Bay Boulevard, Main Street, the waterfront, some of those other properties, North Main Street. So it's difficult to cut it out of the herd and say there are things we could do sooner or later. I really think it's a moving target until we have something that we all agree is workable. And I think there's a more efficient way to work at it, and so many of these issues cross lines. It's not so well defined. When we get into there, it's going to be hard not to say, well, you know, we don't respect those views on your vision. We're going to accept them all, and I think it'd be more productive to do it when we all agree what we want to get out of it.
Okay.
Perhaps in the short term, my only thought would be that we look at all of the different visioning efforts that have gone on in the past and consider an effort to at least coalesce those and identify some commonalities between that. And that could begin and be the foundation for our visioning discussions as they come up through redevelopment. Seems like that might be worthwhile in the very near future.
Madam Mayor, the only other reason why I'm mentioning to do it that way is because we have a revenue source tied to it, and we have money to do it, presumably. We've got a system, we've got a revenue stream of grants that we want to tap into, and we could potentially use those resources to conduct this visioning process versus spending our own money and time and resources now and then needing to do it again.
Okay, Nancy.
I think what Noah just said was a lot of what I wanted to say. There are a lot of plans out there that we've alluded to. It seems to me that it's time to get a new citizens committee together, an ad hoc committee perhaps, and have them go back over and look at these different plans that are available, just outline what's there. And I think it needs to be really comprehensive. We've got a citizens bike committee that works on bike trails and paths. They need to be involved to connect the town. I think we need to have the history might be a little more valuable.
And why would you not want to do it in the public?
What?
Why would you not want to do it at a planning commission meeting?
I would like to do it at a hearings. I mean, once...
No, I mean just the background and pulling that stuff together, like have a real workshop at a planning commission meeting.
Well, we could do that at a planning commission meeting, but as it looks right now, we have several major issues that we need to deal with as planning commissioners. We have a real tight timeline from the state with a couple of things that have to be done, you know, that aren't choices. I'm certainly willing to do it, and I just would like more input from the community.
It seems to me, since this is an ongoing process with the redevelopment part, if you want to get started early, certainly it could be something that you could do either, you know, a subcommittee on your commission. Two of you could, you know, review all the documents. Maybe Noah would like to be included too. Something like that to just get it started, do an outline of the sort of a compilation of all those documents, and then when we're ready to go with the redevelopment process, we've kind of got an outline of where we've been. Does that sound like a practical way to go?
And then open it to some public.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't know. I see three things that we could do right now. But it just takes political will to do them. The first thing is the sidewalks downtown. I think that we need some revamping of the sidewalks so they'll be legal and people won't trip over them and the city is not going to get sued. And we could even come up with a uniform surface for those sidewalks. It could be semi-pervious. I don't know whether that's practical or not, but that's one thing. Second thing you could do is you could, as a council, say that bulb outs will be installed in the downtown area wherever practicable. Do it. The third thing is that you've got the PG&E fund for undergrounding, which is over $2 million sitting in Sacramento waiting for somebody to come and get it and use it in Morro Bay. It's real money. You've got a mess of overhead coming down Morro Bay Boulevard. You've got Cobra overhead lights that have to supplement the existing new lights in there because it doesn't meet the standard for minimum surface light levels. You could use that money and put in the appropriate lighting for pedestrians.
I'm going to interrupt just because you're going for specifics, and I think we want to do a general. And I think that what you're talking about, your specifics, are what you can add to that conversation when you bring those other plans forward. We don't have the money to do it now.
You have to wait till the money gets in. Redevelopment.
Okay.
Yeah. If the council wishes, I would be glad to get a committee of.
We could agendize it
well, or at least have a committee. I know Mr. Lure is very, very interested in what's going on, and he has a lot of knowledge. If two of us and Noah wanted to get together, we could dig into these documents, at least find out what's out there, and schedule a public hearing on the issue. And we would be happy to do that if that is your wish.
What do you think, Council? Is that our wish?
Well, I'd like to see it come before the Planning Commission and have them flesh it out.
Yes.
That the decision not be made right now.
Yeah. Okay. So we have consensus from the Council that that's a good way to start.
That this is sticking to downtown visioning. We're going way beyond downtown visioning here, which is where we're supposed to be talking about.
No,
and
I think
we're
this
getting
is downtown
beyond. No, because we've gone to redevelopment, and then we're talking about the power plant, and then we're talking about other things. So we've gone beyond downtown visioning because we're putting the cart ahead of the horse here, and we haven't even had a conversation yet about our future with Dynegy, which is a council issue,
right.
And we haven't gotten anything back on where we're going with redevelopment. So,
well, but
the topic here
saying,
is downtown visioning. I want to make
what
sure.
What they're saying though is they're going to go through the previous things that have been done, put them all together, bring them to the Planning Commission for a presentation so that we all know where we are. And then when the redevelopment process gets going, we've got that to start from.
And I'm fine with that, but we won't wait beyond that.
But I think what we want to do is pull it back to the downtown visioning and bite off one piece at a time. I know Noah's very interested in the planning, in the power plant, but let's save that for step two, if
Thank
that's
you.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Okay, we got that one done. The next one that seemed to be fairly quick, and I want to leave at least an hour for the big two, which were neighborhood compatibility and perhaps the architectural review tied in with that, and a little bit on environmental incentives. So lot splitting was the other one. This one, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, this came out of the problem that we had with the attempt to split a lot in South Morro Bay, and we wanted to make sure that doesn't happen again. Is that where this topic came from? I don't know who brought it up. Who suggested this one? Was it you? Yeah, it was one of ours. It was one of ours. I thought it was you, Rick. No? Okay, does anybody have anything to say on lot splitting?
Well, yeah.
Okay. I don't know how it got on the list. Somebody had to suggest it.
Yeah. I know Track 41 has a lot of safeguards.
May I add to that?
Sure.
I think the review process is exceedingly important, but I think especially in view of what we need to do as a city for low-income housing, we need to look at places in town where there are lots that can be split and small units built on them. I think just every single lot splitting opportunity has to be considered individually, and it has to be looked at carefully. But, for example, I look at the big lot, which is for sale right now up on Bonita and Main, North Main. You know, if that were split into maybe four smaller lots, you might be able to get a developer to go in there and build some apartments or condominiums for very low income. And there are spots like that around town. But we don't want to be just doing it willy-nilly, you know, just every place. I think they each need to be considered individually.
Madam Mayor, I don't want to confuse lot splitting with developing good housing or density of housing in zones that already should be there. I think we're notorious for putting single-family homes in multifamily areas. And I think that's where we need to be looking at doing that, not through lot splitting. Lot splitting in R1 zones and other places, like Mr. Grantham said, I think is inappropriate as well. I agree with his statements completely. So I think we do need to honor the zoning that is in place, and that means R2 should be R2, R3 should be R3, and R4 should be R4, and that we don't put residential and commercial areas, and we don't downzone, as was mentioned earlier, in other areas.
Well, I think you can look at lot splitting on an individual basis, and I agree with our PC chair that I didn't find that Lunker process to be lacking. I thought it worked out well. I didn't know that the council had issues with the way it worked. I thought the way that it was handled was straightforward and the end was appropriate, and so I don't have any problem with it being an issue that needs change. I think that each case has its own merits and has to be based on those merits, and to take a universal brush on that at this point I think is inappropriate.
Well, I agree. I thought the process there worked. There was an opportunity for discretion, and we exercised that discretion. And I think it is a case-by-case basis. In general, I tend to think there's nothing wrong with small. I think we could urbanize quite a bit, but I also agree that zones that are R1 should that's where some of the compatibility issues are coming in, and I think we have to be sensitive to what we have that works and what we're missing that could help things work better. And I do think there are certain spaces where it's appropriate, but I think the R1 protection is critical.
Well, I think in the in the R1 zones, we recently upgraded the minimum lot size to 6,000 square feet. So I doubt if there's very many areas, very many lots that will be able to be split under that ordinance. So I think we have the ordinances in place. I also think that we can't confuse lot splits with maximum density usage of our existing multifamily areas. I think we need to, you know, those areas are the locations they've been zoned to allow for higher density uses, and that's where we can get our quote-unquote affordable housing units in. And that's the only place that we can get affordable housing units in, except for granny units. So I think the ordinances are in place. I think the discretion was there to look at it at our level and then be reviewed at the city council level, and then the court actions follow after that. So I think we've got it covered.
Well, the Linker case predates me, but it does sound like that there is a process in place that is working, and I really am not going to express any more opinion because I don't have one.
Okay, Noah.
I would just be interested to make sure that we learn any lessons that are available from the Linker experience, so that we do everything we can to avoid the lawsuit and the courthouse. And I did feel very good about Mr. Grantham and Ms. Winholt's comments earlier as well.
Carla?
Well, I agree with most of the commissioners down there that I think our ordinances are in place, and I'm not interested in a blanket coverage. I think we need to look at it case by case, and most of our ordinances are in place. I wouldn't want to take away opportunities for affordable housing options and other
forward from this project. And I know that the city is not in a position to give monetary incentives out to people yet, you know, maybe later on through a redevelopment agency. But right now they need to be more of what can we do to make builders come in with these concepts already, wanting to do that. And I did some searching on the internet, and I found the city of Monterey has a great ordinance, because I'm a proponent of these. Let's shrink the timeline for them. And city of Monterey, I'll forward it to staff later on, but it listed some incentives exactly on this topic. They were going to expedite the permitting process, and they're looking at a 25% reduction in time for these projects. They were going to make it the next day inspection is what they called it. So inspections were going to happen sooner. FAR in Monterey, and if green LEED certified projects were coming forward, they would be exempt from certain FAR standards. They got setback flexibility and increased in their height. So again, a lot of the stuff that was part of the Solo property. And I think it's stuff we can do with minimal cost to the city to encourage developers to bring these type of projects forward.
Sorry. I think incentives are key. Davis also has a really fine subdivision plan that promotes green subdivisions or green building. One of the keys in green construction is the initial layout of the subdivisions and the sites. If you site the houses wrong, then you're fighting a losing battle ever since. So I think we need to start at the subdivision level and try to incorporate these concepts into our codes and conditions from the very start. And I think anything that we can do to cut the timeline, because time is money in a development environment, cut the timeline, give them density bonuses, and for certified good green construction practices and design practices, I think it'd be beneficial for the city in helping get our, I think it's SB 375 or our state 375, and our to improve our housing element as that comes forward too. So I think the opportunities are really there, and if anything we can promote it, I'd approve it.
I agree completely with Commissioners Luhr and Diodati. I just don't know where to pay for those incentives. In my note that I sent
As a citizen, I'm very concerned about subsidizing developers who don't do good projects, and I don't mind subsidizing developers who do good projects. And I'd like to see our fees maybe increase for people who don't do this, and keep the discounts there for people who do. It's rather shocking to see what is becoming conventional construction across many parts of the country and the status of what we see coming through the commission. And I completely agree. The SOLU project was breathtaking in the nature of its understanding of what's at stake in these issues, and I'd like to see projects like that rewarded as we can.
Well, I certainly agree with the previous three commissioners on this issue. I was very happy to hear from the audience that we have at least one house in Morro Bay with a kilowatt-hour meter going backwards, and I think that's great, and I commend you. And it appears that he had to go beyond our existing code to get there, but he got there. And I do know that we're going through the housing element. I would have to ask Bruce in what detail it would be. I know in the housing element is a element that addresses energy conservation, and I know PMC, which you hired to address the housing element, is going to address the city laws that affect green building and conservation. And I'm under the impression that they are going to incorporate that into the housing element, at least the state laws. Now, if we want to go beyond that, we need direction, but at least we're going to, in the next very few weeks, we're going to be getting state law on conservation, correct?
Yeah, yes, you're correct. And I, to be honest with you, I'm not as familiar with the latest changes in what the state law requires in terms of conservation, but that will be a part and parcel of this process.
Okay, I think that while monetary incentives for doing things like this are nice, and if we could afford it, it would be great, but I think there are some non-monetary things we can do. For the SOLU project, which we keep referring to, which is a wonderful project, took them a very long time to get through the process. They invited us to come and look at that. I think maybe four of us were here. John wasn't there way back when that started.
Need to look at developing time and inspection fees, if applicable. We need to identify what makes it green. Are we going to adhere to the LEED standards? Are we going to have our own for people that invest in renewable or clean energy, thus reducing the carbon footprint of the home that they're building or adding on to? So I support it. I don't want to mandate it that they have to go green, but I would like to give them enough incentive to make them want to do it.
Excuse me. Before I make my comment, I just want to reflect back on the visioning for a second, Madam Mayor, and that I think a lot of people talked about taking that case by case, but at the same time, I think we heard three city council members say that they're not really interested in lot splits. I just wanted to put that back in there for the record. So to move on to this item, I agree with Ms. Johnson that I think we need to go beyond subdivisions. We need to do it where building is happening now, which is in remodels and other types of places and single-family homes, and that those need as much attention as a major project does.
I would like to ask for an update from Mr. Ambo about the upcoming agenda item regarding permit fees, and we had a conversation about maybe building in some incentives there.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's coming up on April 13th, and as you indicated, we're coming back with some recommendations on reduced fees to incentivize green projects. We've also transmitted a memo to you that differentiates the certification process, if you will, to give you a little bit more background about what kinds of projects qualify for actual green certifications or LEED certifications. And we've given you a lot of background information. A lot of folks have been kind of struggling with what does LEED certification mean. Thankfully, Christine Rogers has helped us put together that. So we've given you a pretty good memo that outlines the specifics in that process of certification. you have it independently. It was distributed now, and then we'll also attach it to your memorandum for April 13th on the reduced fees, so you can have both of them and see the whole picture at once.
Thank you, and I agree also that we should work to do things that aren't really going to cost us and will provide value. And I think time is money, so an expedition of the permit process would be, I think, an excellent place to start. And I do think we need to continue with education and outreach. And I did mention in my notes that the things that we're doing with city projects are providing a great example for the community to learn from and take a note of. And I would hope that we could continue to highlight those things within the community and really work towards the point where almost every project that comes through has similar concepts as that with the SOLU project. And I agree also that we should look not only with new construction but with renovation and side projects as well.
I think we've probably covered just about everything. comments would pretty much just be that I picked up a sheet from the building department that listed the green program development guidelines so that I knew what I was what was being required, and I feel that really it's our responsibility to follow the code and not go beyond. I don't feel that it is fair for us to require somebody to go beyond what the state guidelines are and what the building code is. If people choose to do that, that's their prerogative, but I'm for asking what's required of them. These are updates that have to be in place by August of this year, and then there'll be more by 2010, and I don't feel that it's fair to go beyond what's required by code, and hopefully if people choose to, that's great, but that's all I'm interested in at this point.
Okay, well, we've heard some suggestions about other things that we could do, that Monterey and Davis both have some ideas that we could look at, perhaps. I'm wondering, Council, would you like to make this a future agenda item to discuss the increased fees for non-green projects or putting the green at the top of the list, or would you like to have the Planning Commission come forward with some suggestions for us, and then we respond to that? Mr. Ambo, I was going to suggest we have your name over there.
Okay, I'd be happy to sit there. I'd be very happy to sit there. But you have an item coming to your agenda on the 13th on that, and we've developed some recommendations.
Okay. Well, why don't we throw these other ones into the list on that discussion then, just to consider.
Just to let you know, your staff has been working on a strategic
was appropriate on their building. The community needs to establish a special district, which is usually the municipal boundary, and then the homeowner would come in for a special assessment, tax assessment, against their own property, and then it would be funded by municipal bond sales. Now, this has been put together for several communities. Berkeley was first, Palm Desert, Solana Beach, San Luis is considering it, and I think it would be wise if we could include that in our discussions here and hopefully implement it in Morro Bay. I think it'd be a...
This is something that has to go to an election?
No. It can be approved by findings of the City Council. The findings are already out there. I'd be glad to provide links to anybody who's interested in it.
All right, if we can add that to the mix there, too. Could I add one more?
The 811 follow-up? We'd be happy to add that with this item, if you like.
Just one more thing. I know we referred to the SOLU project, the Dunya Lodge, but as we're talking about new building and remodel, I think we also want to offer these incentives to people who own properties, business properties in town, who are willing to upgrade and green them up a bit. That might go back to our downtown visioning thing, if people had the incentive, yep, through 811. Do business properties qualify for 811?
Both business and residential.
Good.
So
yes, if you guys would pursue that, we'd like it.
Madam Mayor, yes. If you will, I think we're about a month out for being able to get a more comprehensive list of all of these things pulled together. if you think it might be more productive to look at everything that's underway, that's already underway, that's mandated, that's underway at the county level, like SB 375 and some of those other things, kind of the whole universe of things that we're working on, if you'd like to look at that, or if you'd just like to pull this out and look at, you know, what is it, Assembly Bill 811, we can do that too. I'm just saying there may be other things that you may want to look at.
So to do that, it would be what, our second meeting in April?
It'd be about a month. I mean, we're into our third meeting. There every day we get 3 to 5 of these that come across our desk.
Are they going to stop?
Yeah. Well, thankfully okay. We have the stimulus plan, but
all right. Council, what's your feeling? Do you want to wait a month and have a more comprehensive collection of information?
That sounds good. I do anticipate with the 8-11 conversation and probably all of this that it will go down to the Planning Commission for review and comments. And I wonder if it should start there so we as a council can take the expertise that's on the Planning Commission under review and acknowledge those comments as we look to maybe make some recommendations and action.
All right, so you got a little more time, Bruce. We'd rather have the whole picture.
Do you still want us? We'll still come back with the fee, though.
Yeah, the whole thing.
The more comprehensive look at everything.
Right.
Thank
everything.
You.
All the different green incentives we can come up with.
Do we want to start that conversation at the Planning Commission or come to the council?
Well, if we've got some information already coming to us, I would say let's do that, but certainly ask for Planning Commission input on it. And
I can tell you if what we're going to be recommending is putting that in the earlier phases of the development of this, so that would be one of the first things we'd be recommending. Okay. But there's so many of them, we're going to have to lay it out for some time, and it'll help you understand how they all relate and work together.
Okay. All right, now we get to the biggies, and we got 45 minutes left. I'm going to start with the neighborhood compatibility, because I think architectural review kind of falls into whatever we talk about there as part of it. Do I have agreement on that idea? No? Betty's saying no.
I'm thinking that the architectural review is fairly specific, and it goes beyond neighborhood compatibility. I mean, is it kind of a broader topic? Are you thinking, like, even architectural review for businesses and other places as well?
Yeah.
So isn't it kind of broader?
Yeah. Well, okay. Can we do that quickly? I want to give at least half an hour for the FAR discussion, because I know that we need that. All right, architectural review. I'm the one that put that on, so I'm going to start. I get complaints about people saying, you know, you're getting too specific with the reviews that you do on things, you know, telling us where the washer and dryer should go, telling us what kind of bushes to plant. It should be, in my feeling, it should be enforcing the codes and ordinances. You can certainly make suggestions, but I get a lot of irritated calls about anything more detailed. So that's why it's on the list. I guess I'm going to go with the council first on this one to get their feeling, because I put it on, and then we'll see, you know, you can respond to that. How's that? Carla, you want to go?
Well, I want to thank them first for the job they do. That's but I know that's and then break out the belt. Yeah, no. I was a little surprised when I read their comments on that, on their response to it. The process, it becomes subjective and then becomes architectural review, which is something we don't have in this town, an architectural review board, and then becomes beyond the Planning Commission's job, I feel, personally.
I'd just like to try to work towards clarifying what it is that we're looking for, so that the builders and the community understands those rules, and we can hopefully become a little more streamlined with the process. And I think avoiding subjectivity is a good one, and also trying not to dictate style and taste to our architects and planners and projects. I think that's an important thing to do, and if we can be clear and also even-handed with as many projects or all projects, that will reduce the amount of time and effort that goes into it. I also think, though, that there's a certain amount of room for us to maybe tighten things up so that we are guiding projects closer to what we're looking for, and these green incentives, I think, will help that. That's my comments.
I would say, however, If the commission continues to have issues with things that are brought before you, and you see that we consistently have something not going right, that you need to tell us that maybe we need to add something to your plate then. You know, if you're seeing a need for us to make comment about articulation or whatever, I don't even know what it would be, that let's add that, you know, if that's a consistent concern for you.
I absolutely agree.
Well, we've got people that aren't architects for the most part doing architectural review. That doesn't, I don't know, that to me that's a little odd. And I'd like to make sure that, you know, it's from an advisory situation and not written in stone directives. So that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, and I'll add that I'm not blaming anybody for what you do, because I know you get into your discussions and I know you have the best result of a project in your mind. I think part of it is maybe having staff be a little bit more directing on, okay, wait, you're getting beyond where you need to discuss. And I think that might help just focus you in a little bit better, because I know when you get involved in it, it becomes exciting. So anyway, your turn to talk.
Okay, guys, it's your turn. Actually, I have to correct over here. We do have an architect on our board, and not only is he an architect, he's an architectural instructor and a builder and some people with really great background. But I know sometimes all of us are guilty of making a few extra suggestions about permeable surfaces or planting drought-tolerant plants. And I think what we need to do is make sure that we keep them as suggestions. We are not an architectural review board, and I don't think we should become one. That said, it's your turn, guys.
I don't think the Planning Commission should be an architectural review board.
I agree. I don't think we're an architectural review board, but at the same time, the same way people bring in projects to the staff and they sit down with people from roads and sewers and get advice, I'm not sure how much of that type of advice is architectural. And sometimes we see problems that I think if we ask, did you think of this? It's not so much what the material on the facade is. It's more sometimes there are functioning aspects of the project that perhaps didn't seem to be considered, that we can make it a better project. Some of the things to me seem to be pretty basic: noise-causing elements, you know, views next to adjacent properties, the nature of certain architectural elements. It's not so much we don't want the Victorian house or the Spanish house. It's, you know, that's going to cause noise. Did you consider moving it to another position? That's to me is aiding the value of the neighborhood, not necessarily architectural things. I do have to bite my tongue quite a bit on the architectural things.
Well, you know, I do have over 30 years experience in designing and building homes and commercial properties. So, but that being said, I know we're not an architectural review board, and I never intend my comments to be that. But I'd also view there are situations where we're required to consider the architectural aesthetics of a building in the specific plan overlay districts, especially in the downtown, and that's where
it hasn't happened yet, but conditioning certain materials or schemes. These folks are trying to live and succeed here, and if we're telling them they bring a pallet full of potential material they're going to use, if they're all okay, then in my mind they're all okay, because if product B goes on sale and we've conditioned them to use product A, we've just given them a big injustice and we're going to hurt them at the end of the day, and I don't want to be ever accused of being guilty of that. So as we move forward, and if a redevelopment agency is in our future and we're going to have some theme towns, it might be your council's decision to add an architectural review board, but and until then, I'll do my best not to be an architect.
Okay, I think just to sum it up, you have it. We're not an architectural review board, but we're five people with opinions, which we share on occasion, and you need to know they are just opinions and suggestions, and maybe a washing machine or a dishwasher or a water heater would be better somewhere else, and all we do is suggest it, and if they don't want to do it, they don't have to.
Okay. Rick, you had another comment?
Yeah, just in response to what Nancy was saying, that's why I use the words "for the most part." And I realize Michael does have that experience, and I have no problems at all with his suggestions that could help benefit a buyer or a builder of a home.
Okay, great. Thank you all so much for cooperating on this. Now we've got the big one, and we've got a half an hour, so we've got good time to be able to talk about it. I'm going to start on this one because I had a conversation with Bruce today. I've followed this. In fact, I was one of the instigators of this whole FAR conversation a couple of years ago now. And I had a conversation with Bruce because we seemed to be kind of stymied on it. And I asked him if, with new projects as they come along, we're waiting for our general plan and coastal plan and zoning to get back. They actually answer a lot of the issues that we want to have FAR answer. What I've asked him is if staff, when they do projects that are coming up now, if they could just, without us actually starting anything, put a paragraph in that project saying, if this were under FAR, here's how the project would be different. And just do that for whatever, the few months it's going to take, hopefully before we get our general plan back. And that way we would be able to see the effect of FAR on projects that come before you. So it would actually be listed there. This is what would happen if it was FAR. This is how we're dealing with it under our current codes. And he said, yes, they could do that without it being any kind of a real difficult situation for them. So that's kind of where I would like to go. I just wanted to start it off with that idea. And then I think this one probably, let's start with Planning Commission again, because you've kind of been through it all too, and then Council can respond.
Well, as I indicated in my interview with you guys, the FAR is a new concept to me, but I see that as an advantage because I was able to come in here with an open mind, and I've listened to both sides have spoken with me in the last few weeks about FAR. And it's interesting. I take issue with some of the comments on it being a taking of property rights. Zoning by nature is an infringement on property rights, and this is supposed to be an enhancement of properties. And when I see the list of cities that are implementing FAR, they're good cities. They're cities that people travel to. Have booming economies, and I don't see the nexus between the devaluing of property and an infringement on property rights. An example that comes to mind is our own beach track, and there's you can't build a second story, yet they have some of the highest property values in our town. So I've challenged, and I will continue to challenge those who have said that this is a taking of property value to show me some sort of empirical data of where this is happening, because I don't see it, and my buzzer buzzed, and we have plenty of time, so I'll come back around for round two. Pass on the mic.
I think I was at the first couple of meetings with Janice on this issue also, and it's well documented my views on this issue. I'm against FAR. I don't think it's a proper tool to use for this. I think we have better tools that are much more appropriate. There is a quote-unquote taking when you create 70% to 80% of a neighborhood as nonconforming, as what we will do in several of these areas. When a house is deemed legal nonconforming, it's going to put a big red star on a big red letter on it that's going to hurt it in the marketplace. It's going to devalue it in the market, and I'll cede on that one.
Well, my comments on the record too are out there. I'm not opposed to FAR, but my concern is I don't think FAR does what the community advocates think it will. I don't think it protects the community at all, because it still allows types of designs to come forward that would maximize the way the lot appears from the front. So what I thought was fascinating was the last time it came before us that the commission, the staff had actually brought forward a form-based piece that I thought was very progressive and solved a lot of the issues of the projects looking like boxes. However, there still is the ability of a very large home to be built out to the maximum capability, and I don't think it was ever the intent when the zoning was established that any of these districts actually would be built like that. I think it was an envelope that the project would be within, and I think we're seeing it increasingly, it becomes the form giver. And so I would be an advocate of looking at FAR very carefully, but with the form-based kind of work that staff had proposed.
I think I can concur with Commissioner Lucas on this. I believe that FAR by itself is not going to solve the problem of neighborhood compatibility and bulk, size, and scale. I think that's the issue. Right now we have lot coverage, and so you, if it's in the box, then it's acceptable, and you give it a check mark. And so that's exactly what we're ending up with. We're getting boxes in our smaller lots, which is incompatible with the smaller houses in a lot of our part of our community. And FAR can be part of this. If we ask staff to provide us with FAR information, it has to be accompanied with many conditions on how FAR would be implemented and what its limits would or shouldn't be. From what my information says is that the average size of a new house has doubled in the last 30 years, and that is the problem. We have a lot of our community is 50 years old, and the new houses are a lot larger than the old houses.
Thank you. Let me start by saying that I am not in favor of big boxy houses, those things with the garage on the bottom and the whole house up above in a big box. Yet, as we just said a few minutes ago, we also are not an architectural review committee. The thing that bothers me most about FAR, I can see how it can work to some degree, but I've also seen cases where it doesn't work at all and where it really is hard for the people who are trying, especially to remodel. We had some examples that I won't go into right now. I think the thing that bothers me most about what we're being asked to do is pick a number, any number, you know. Do what Carmel does. Do what Santa Clara does. They're doing it perfectly someplace else. The majority of the people want this. I cannot believe that these people that I've met who've come to before our board, and they're all good, wonderful people. Dorothy's a friend of mine, one of the best photographers I know. But I don't think that this group that is vocal is the majority of Morro Bay. I don't think they have the perfect plan that they want us just to blindly adopt. And I've gotten that email more than once. You know, don't waste any more of your time on this. Don't waste staff time on this. We've worked it out for you. Just adopt it. Fine. If you know how to do it better, next time there's an opening on the Planning Commission, come and apply. But that's what really bugs me the most about it, is that I feel like we're getting it shoved down our throats. I think there are some good things we could look at, and there are some things that aren't going to work for us. We need to go back, like Jerry Luer said, and look at our review for larger homes. Look at what we have in place and think about the Planning Commission that we have now and what you want in the future in the Planning Commission. And I think that's it.
One thing that hasn't been brought up yet is how FAR would affect not just right this minute, but months and years down the road, how it would affect our property taxes and our city revenue. The smaller homes, of course, have a lower property taxes. So over a period of time, that could have a big impact on the city coffers. I'm also not a fan of the big box houses. I feel FAR, though, is too restrictive. I think that it's not family friendly when somebody wants
tonight where we said, oh, well, they do it this way in Monterey, they do it this way here, we should do it that way here. And yet when it comes to FAR or something else that tries to describe how we want our community to grow, that, oh, let's not look at other places. It has to be very specific to Morro Bay. So I'm seeing a little bit of, you know, friction there with that kind of idea that, yeah, we, at certain things we can see where it's been successful at other places, but let's not bring a success in another town here if it has to do with FAR. So I'm seeing that as a little bit, you know, contradictory. That's one thing. Second of all, the idea that we could add a paragraph to a staff report about how this house would be if it was involved with FAR, I understand the intent of that, but I don't know how you would do that when we haven't picked a FAR standard or we haven't decided what kind of FAR we're going to have. So I don't know how that could be helpful because I don't see how it fits inside of any kind of...
If I could specify, I was going to use the number that they suggested.
The group
that has been pushing the
okay.
whole.
When I last looked at that document, I confess it's been a while. I don't know that there was one number. So whatever. Regardless of that, let me just move through this a little bit, okay? That's another comment. The idea about the legal nonconforming. When I moved to Morro Bay 22 years ago, I moved into a legal nonconforming house. It had just been purchased by my landlord. And what was nonconforming was that there was already two houses on one lot in an R1 zone. So there's different reasons why different houses are legal nonconforming. So to make this lump judgment about legal nonconforming, I'm not sure if it fits everything. Okay, so I just want to mention that statement. A lot of the language against FAR has to do, well, this may be what happens. We have stuff in place right now. I would challenge you to find where we have right now where we enforce anything about neighborhood compatibility on a strict sense or that there's any very strict ordinance that talks about that. There is nothing in place in my mind currently that addresses anything that FAR would address. And to suppose that it may do this or maybe do that is again, just supposition because we haven't decided or picked a particular project to go with or a particular standard. The whole concept of the 2,500 limit was a stopgap measure. We did that until we addressed this issue of FAR or neighborhood compatibility. So we need to get off this stopgap thing and move on to the real ordinance. And so if it's been 2 years... You know, we're a year behind on where we need to be. The last comment that I would make is that I would hope that we would take, if we haven't taken either the groups or somebody else's, I think we just need to start somewhere, and I think that's an objection that I heard over here. But if you don't start with one piece, then how do you start moving it about? And so if whether you start with the citizens group, which I beg to differ with you because... You know, the citizens that had the big, that started this, had over 100 people at their first workshop. And when we get comment, even tonight when we had comment, I got 2 emails saying that they were against FAR, and I got 5 emails saying that they were for FAR. So every time we talk about the subject, it's always outbalanced in favor of it as opposed to being against it. Whether it's on a small scale like 2 to 5 or whether it's on a large scale like 100 to 5. So I hope that we recognize that this is not a dead issue for this town, and I think it's only become more quiet because the building industry itself has calmed down. But you put one big house in a neighborhood and you've got that whole neighborhood upset. And that's how it's bled across the town because even though in spite of what a public comment said earlier, maybe it's only 250 houses over 5,000 houses, but that one house is in my neighborhood, and you've ruined my street. Okay? So it's about more than just one.
And I'll pick up from Ms. Winholtz there because, as with Mr. Diodati, I'm fairly new to this discussion, and I did spend a lot of time walking through neighborhoods. And what I've noticed is, yes, there are two very vocal groups that have been in the trenches on this issue for quite a long time. From my understanding, this conversation has been going on since the late 80s. And in my opinion, this is an issue that needs to be addressed. And because of the rate of development at this point, we are actually at a great area for some adoption of an ordinance that would give us the time and opportunity to take a look at how it's working, that we can amend if necessary. And as I walk neighborhoods, I found that, yes, this is a key concern to our community, and we need to move forward to address this. The comment I heard was that this is still going on, and we haven't found any resolution. And all it takes is a project to go into a neighborhood for the whole neighborhood to feel like they have been impacted and have lost value for their homes. And that's where the property value conversation baseline and coalesce that with recommendations from staff and actually give it to staff to work on, hopefully with help from the Planning Commission, to make some adjustments and move forward with this so we can resolve this issue and start to make the small adjustments. We can put this to flight and make the small adjustments for success, and instead of just continually going over these battlegrounds that seem to not be getting us anywhere except making everyone in the community feel like they've been burned on one side or another.
I'm not in support of FAR. And I guess I get the other emails Ms. Winholtz doesn't get because mine were 3-2 the other way against FAR. And in my neighborhood, I'm on a larger lot, so large houses work better in my neighborhood than small ones, maybe because I'm just on a large parcel. I feel that FAR is too restrictive, and maybe in the beach track here where it's a single family or a single lot, the values hold their place there, but in other areas of town they don't. A lot of the houses that were built here were built as beach homes for people from the valley back in the 50s and 60s, so they're substandard, especially by today's building code and guidelines. So if you want to replace those, which most people would want to, you would tear it down and build what? The FAR would dictate on those size lots a very limited ability to rebuild those. For starters, they're non-conforming. They'd be legal non-conforming, which would mean you'd be in front of the Planning Commission paying a permit fee of, I think it starts at $3,600 right out the gate and then go from there. So, I know there's guidelines we need, changes to the guidelines we have, but I am not in support of the Citizens Committee at this point. I think our Planning Commission in regards to this has worked hard. I know Nancy and Mr. Lohr and Mr. Lucas have been there, and Mr. Woodson for a long time working with these issues, and I know they'll continue to work with them and move forward along with staff to bring us some guidelines that I think will hopefully address a lot of these issues. But at this point in time, I'm not in support of FAR as it's been presented.
Okay. My feelings on it, I like the concept. I'm not sure it works. And there's a particular property that I know of on Bradley that has, if it's the footprint, I don't know if it even came to the Planning Commission. I don't think it did because it fit the footprint. But it has this huge high-ceilinged living room that makes it a massive structure on the street. I don't think FAR would answer that because the floor area isn't the problem. The problem is this egotistical airy that they've made out of their living room. And so it's frustrating to me to say, okay, this is going to be the be-all and end-all, because it's not. It's not going to solve the problem of out-of-scale buildings in neighborhoods. However, I still believe that, you know, we have a lot of people who do believe in it and do support it. And that's why I'm suggesting what I'm suggesting. Give it, 3 or 4 months. Let's see where we go. I mean, I know that our new planning, our general plan, our zoning and everything will address a lot of these issues. We can't use it yet because we haven't got it approved. And I'd like to just see on each of the projects that come forward, okay, if this was with the number that they've given us, that they've recommended, the Citizens Committee, what would be the difference in the project? And that way, all of us can be talking from a position of knowledge. This is, okay, now we can see what it would do. This is how it would change the project and see if it would be a good change or a bad change. So that's what I'm going to support, that we try doing that for, let's say, 6 months and then bring it back for a final decision. Hopefully we'll have some other tools back by that time that we can add to the arsenal. But that way at least we'll be talking from a position of how it works in Morro Bay. I know that they need funding to be able to go to the different neighborhoods and pick a number that won't make everything nonconforming. And our previous motion was specifically to not create something that would have the majority of homes in this town nonconforming. I agree, that is an issue. Yes, we can make exceptions. If it burns down, you can say they can rebuild it. But it still is an issue in sales and things like that. So that's where I'm going.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Can I just add one comment, and then I'll zip it up? The idea that it's too restrictive or that it works or doesn't work, I just want to reiterate that you can't judge that until we have a plan in place. So I just want to say that. And I think it's agreed that FAR is not perceived as the end-all. I think we all know that as well, that there has to be other things that go around it to address all the issues that we're talking about. But I think in terms of the intent of a FAR, I think that's true. And if the minimum is what we can get...
What we look at it, but we can't tell them to change a thing because there's really nothing there to do it. Now, when we did the lot split thing, we said that there was a certain continuity to width of front yard and quality of space that would be violated greatly by this other piece that was coming in. And so it's really a matter of where that gray area is between what's acceptable and compatible and what's the maximum build out under the rules that we have now. And just from my own experience, I would never say that a smaller house and where that smaller stops, I'm not quite sure. But a smaller house can be a better house than a bigger house. It just depends on where that line is drawn. And quality will always sell as opposed to quantity. We've got lots of big houses in town that I don't think are very well done, and we've got lots of small ones that are exquisite that probably per square foot dwarf the cost of sales per square foot on some of the larger ones.
And I just might add is that I think my perception of FAR is the stick, and then you surround it with our carrots, the council's carrots and the city's wishes. You add squares, give them squares as incentive, square feet. If they articulate front, side, you give them their bonus. If you want them to have some kind of green element to the house or solar power requirements, you add that as their incentive. You give them more squares to that basic FAR. And whatever else the city deems as desirable for the community that it's going to go in, that's the way it would be administered.
Oh, Bruce, did you have a comment?
Well, one of the other things I'd like to add is just looking at a number for each house, as Commissioner Lucas indicated, the proponents do have a number, and the analysis that we looked at over a year ago did gauge it to that number, and we did do a prototype to underscore the point that it really doesn't get at compatibility, because when you look at what the surrounding FAR is, that's really what you want to try and compare against for compatibility. It's not just what you're proposing. It's what exists in the neighborhood. That's a pretty labor-intensive piece of the analysis, and that's kind of where we left it before. So I just wanted to point that out. Much of what we're talking about is compatibility, and just reflecting what the number is one thing, but it really doesn't get at or tell you anything about compatibility if you're trying to use that as a numeric basis of comparison, which is only what FAR is.
Okay, well, I think everybody's looking at it as a starting point to solve the problem. It's obviously not the only thing.
Not
and it's not going to work on its own. It has to have the other tools, too.
I think there's a strong voice on the other side from several people here who don't think that it's the answer. I just wanted to say a couple things. First, I know from personal experience that making an adjustment or a remodel in a legal nonconforming home is very expensive. Just having to come to Planning Commission to add 300 or 400 square feet to a home that's nonconforming yet is very compatible in that neighborhood is a big issue, not just for me, but I'm sure for a lot of people. Bradley, we talked about. That's a neighborhood of big houses, whether we like that house, the newest one on Bradley or not, there are a lot of very, very different styles up in that area. That whole situation with Cabrillo and the kinds of houses, they're big lots with different houses. I don't think FAR, as Mr. Ambo said, is going to make a big difference in terms of whether that house gets built or a Victorian gets built down the street from it. It's just a neighborhood of different kinds of homes, which is very different than some of our island streets or tree streets up in North Morro Bay. And we can't compare compatibility. I think the closest we get to this is with the beach tract. We have restrictions in the beach tract that have worked for years. Why can't we look at how those restrictions are working and apply them as needed to other parts of town? I think it has to be done by neighborhood. But I still firmly believe that going through this whole FARP thing is not the answer.
If I could comment real quick. I see there being two issues. One is duplicative plans, and you have this bugs me where you see houses next to each other. They tend to be big and boxy, but they look identical, or the door was switched on the front. So that, and then these out of scale homes. And I think that my first question was, where's your petition? And they didn't want to do one. So I'm still throwing that out there. If you want to see this move forward, show your support. Bring a petition forward for the Planning Commission and the City Council to see your support. And then non-conforming, that's another case study where we can look at cities that have implemented FAR. What did they do with their non-conforming buildings? What's happened to them now? How are they existing? And it's an easy analysis for staff to do on all of those. But the bottom line is, I think we need to do something. The towns, again, that have FAR in place are vibrant, healthy towns. Seattle, Portland, Carmel, Capitola, big towns, little towns, they're different, but the one thing they have in common is a vibrant tourist economy, a nice quality of life, a high demand for visitors, and we have some of that, but there's a lot of what we don't have. These other issues that we've talked about, the downtown visioning, redevelopment agency, blight in our town, I mean, they're tied. Housing and the health of our economy are tied. And I think we need to realize and take a step back and say, okay, how do these two components interact with a healthy community, and why is it work? Is it why these other towns are healthy? I mean, the corridor of our town is very slim. Tourists see our houses. Are they not coming here? Are we having low vacancy rates because driving through town is they just want to get the heck out of here and go into San Luis Obispo? These are questions that need to be asked, and FAR could possibly be the answer. So there's still some work to do, and I would like to see this analysis, these myths, put to bed soon.
All right. Council, what do you think of my suggestion that we have staff add to each project that comes forward what would happen if it was a FAR project? That way we'll be dealing with knowledge. Is that reasonable?
Without
enacting it. We're going to take the number that they've suggested. We're going to do things just the way we always have, but there's going to be an additional paragraph on every staff report that says, if we were instigating FAR on this project, this is what the difference would be.
I'd like to hear from staff on that.
I'd be happy to tell you. As I indicated earlier, all it's going to tell you is what the FAR is of that proposed project. It does not get at what is surrounding, and that's the essence of the analysis, and that's the part we've already completed, where we've taken a couple prototypical blocks, and then we've raced or compared the FAR and said this is what it'll do. Okay. We can give you a numeric number that says this is the number, and this is what the number of the project is, and this is what the number of the houses is being... That the proponents are saying, and that'll just give you two numbers, but no basis whatsoever for comparison, or at least getting at judging the compatibility of it, or at least relationship of sizes on the block. The difference about taking a number from any community is that we don't know what the basis, what the development pattern was, what the prevailing lot sizes, what the build-out pattern was of that community. That's why we're all a little bit different. And some communities have FARs. Yes, I've been in them, and I've used them too. But in the communities I've been in a residential context, they've been so high that they had no bearing whatsoever in reality in terms of being a development constraint because they've had to set them so high.
All right, but you just said that you've already done the neighborhood checks.
We've finished that part of the analysis. A year and a half ago.
Add that sentence to the staff report as well. This is what the FAR would be. This is the neighborhood effect that you're going to have.
That piece of the analysis took months just to do it for the three neighborhoods we looked at.
All right, so do it in those three.
We have already done that.
No, I know, but I'm saying for projects that come through on those three neighborhoods where you already know what the neighborhood is and you've got the FAR number, add a paragraph to those projects saying, if this was done through FAR in this neighborhood, this is what the effect would be on this project in the neighborhood.
That analysis took place on a block-by-block basis.
Okay.
And if we're on a different block, it's entirely possible we have a different lot size pattern or at least built-out pattern, and we'd want to verify that. That's why this has been a very labor-intensive endeavor. That piece of the analysis is where we've been, and to do that again for another prototypical block, depending upon where you want to put it, is a fairly extensive analysis.
Okay, Betty.
I think there's two points here. One is the difference between compatibility and FAR. I mean, FAR was an attempt to get at compatibility, but FAR is not what we said before. It's not the end-all for compatibility. So that's why I think your idea is fine. Whether it's related to the compatibility study or whether it's just
issue.
The FAR number,
okay.
We can still just add the FAR number, so I think that's a fine idea. The second part of that is I'd like the idea over here that we start debunking some of these myths, and I'd like to see that happen as well.
Okay.
I'm also supportive of that. I think we kind of have an adolescent horse in front of us that we're saying the legs are too long and the tail's too short.
Concern that we heard. And neither was the beach track on the west side of the freeway was not a concern. It's just those three areas, the Island Streets, the Tree Streets, the center of the town, and perhaps the Hillcrest neighborhood. And that's where we left it, and we developed recommendations. And that's why I need to tell you, if we take one look at that, the cost of doing that and developing one option for code was $25,000. And if we got in there and had to get in there and didn't come to some agreement, we'd either have to come back to you and reallocate new resources or put it on the program of staff coming back and doing the analysis ourselves. Because that's kind of where we left it.
Okay. Well, it was a combination. I know that. And we left it at that. We knew we didn't fund it. And we'll look at it when we come to budgeting. But for right now, I would like to see for all future, I'm making this a motion. I would move that council direct staff for all future projects for the Planning Commission for the next 6 months that each staff report include a paragraph about how this would work with FAR at the number that the Citizens Committee has given us.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yeah. If there's ever an example that you would want to use this, it go up to Vista Street and Piney Way, and you'll see a big house on a very tiny lot. And it's the epitome, and it's not that it necessarily has a lot of neighbors, but if that had had maybe a FAR ratio, there would have been at least some space around it. So we're not doing anything. We're not changing anything. We're merely asking for a figure. And it gets us nowhere, but it gives us information, which is the first step.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I would like to, before we make our vote, we give the Planning Commission opportunity to place any recommendations.
I'm going to say no because it's after 8 o'clock and we got to get to our next meeting. So let's vote on this one. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
One. Okay, Carla's opposed. All right, we got through it all. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate it. I know this was difficult, but we accomplished something this time. I'm so happy. Now, we're going to have a short break, and then the council is going to reconvene for two items.
Can we just take a two-minute break?
Yeah. Quick break.
I mean, like
very quick.
Well, first, come back, and then this break is over.
All council members are present. So the first item is authorization to apply for the COPS hiring. Public comment. Does anyone wish to make public comment? I forgot.
Good evening. This is late for me. My name is Claire Grantham, and I just want to encourage you to approve applying for the grant to fund an additional officer for the police department. I think it's really, really important. I see Rick has an article that we cut out of the paper last week having to do with a murder trial that's going on in Cayucas. And it was very interesting what I read in the article, and they talked about how the person who's been accused of this murder knew that there were only two cops on duty in Morro Bay at the time. So I just want to encourage you to approve this application. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Brian Millard, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Peace Officers Association, where I serve as president. I would also like to urge you to approve the application for a new officer. From my perspective, getting the staffing levels back up to a level that they were at prior to the 2005 layoffs is extremely important for our staff. To share with you a recent story, about 2 weeks ago, we had one of our corporals who was working with me called in sick that night, which left me and another officer on duty. We had arrested one intoxicated driver, and that officer was transporting the intoxicated driver to the county jail when we had a distraught woman at our station that started breaking the windows out at the front door. I was the only officer on at the time, and I had to confront this individual by myself by walking outside, and her boyfriend was also present. Credit, prior relationships, some amount of the planets being aligned, but thankfully both subjects calmed down and replied with my orders. I had been screaming at dispatch to get me some backup from the sheriff's office. They did respond from Los Osos, but their call time, even from Los Osos, was immunity from violence, and a police department that is struggling to control that. I am appreciative for my service to Morro Bay and the relationship that I have with the citizens that is not like it is in Oakland. But I wonder, at what point did the warning signs from that city, which did not used to be like that, at what point did our response, the police department, the city, fail to recognize the change that has occurred and has plunged that city into such drastic violence that they're now struggling to control? I don't want to see Morro Bay slip. I want to continue our quality of life, and I'm urging you to consider this to allow us to have the people to get out and reach out to those community, to be in the schools, to be with our children, to be with those people, to see us on the streets rather than just responding to a call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members of the council, Madam Mayor, members of the staff, I urge you to accept this grant. I know it's going to cost the city some money, but as I understand it, you're going to get 3 years of an officer on the paid for by the grant, and we only have to pay for 1 year, and I think that's a steal. It's a heck of a deal, and I hope you'll go for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? That closes public comment. All right. Now, we'll get to the staff report. That's authorization to apply for the COPS Hiring Recovery Program grant. John.
Thank you, Mayor and Council, and thank you very much for allowing this item on your special agenda tonight. Unfortunately, there's a really short turnaround time for this federal grant. It's sometimes that's the way they do things, and the application is something like 42 pages and requires an awful lot of research, but it's well worth it, let me tell you. I provided you with a staff report explaining what the federal grant is and the fiscal impact and what the requirements and the retention requirements are. I really think this is a great opportunity for us to obtain additional
peace officer position at a very minimal cost. Our department plan prioritizes the need to bring our patrol staffing back to pre-2005 levels. As Sergeant Millard said, in order to provide a safe minimum staffing level and backup for our officers, this grant will begin to help us reach that goal. As you know, it pays 100% of the base salary for 3 years, but it also requires the city to retain and fund the position for one additional year. Over the past years, there haven't been any federal grant opportunities for us to apply for until now. It's a competitive grant, so there's no guarantee that we'll get it, but I feel it extremely important, and I believe we owe it to our organization and to the citizens to give it our best shot. The other thing I'd like to mention is there's a good chance that we may lose one of our police officers to active duty. He's a reservist, and he may get called to Afghanistan for a year. And that's even going to hurt us more because we can't backfill that position. We have to keep it open by law. And so if we're down another officer, we're going to be really hurting. So I just, again, I would request that you consider this grant opportunity. It may not come about for another long time, and I think we need to take advantage of it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Questions for staff?
I have two.
Okay.
Mr. Durant, what you said about if an officer leaves, but we could hire a person temporarily till he returns. In his position, can we not?
A general funded position?
Well, if he's leaving, and
no, we can't.
You can't put in a person temporarily until he returns. Okay.
Not unless council would fund that additional position, but we have to hold that position open.
So because of that we're paying him while he's over there?
No. So, but the law says we still have to hold that position open because he's in the military service.
Right. But we could use his pay while he's not here to hire someone temporarily.
You could, but we're not going to be able to hire anybody telling them they only have a job for a year.
Okay. And then my second question is, at the end of the 3 years that this term is for, are you in anticipation of any retirements?
There's always the possibility of retirements and officers leaving to other agencies, sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions for staff?
To piggyback on Ms. Wenholt's comment, in that case where there was retirement, would we be able to adjust? It appears that we would not be able to, so we'd still be held to funding this position and make the decision about the retirement outside of that. There's no flexibility for us within that position.
Right, because it has the supplanting requirements that you cannot use the grant funds to supplant a position that's been funded in the general fund, or the city council cannot direct the a position to be unfunded and then say, oh, geez, we're going to use the grant money to pay for it. That's supplanting.
Thank you. Yes, I have two questions, please.
An officer on patrol. So that officer would be on patrol. So when Brian earlier spoke about the bank robbery that we had two officers on patrol. One of them was responding to mutual aid on the 41 of the CHP, which people give us mutual aid, and mutual aid means that we have to give them aid. So whenever an occurrence comes up like this and we respond, we send one officer out, which leaves us with one officer to patrol the whole city. So in essence, we'd be getting a police officer for about $35,000 a year for that 4 years, if you break it down to that. Okay, comment? I'm not leaking any confidential information. This was in the paper, but I just want to read one paragraph. And this is regarding the fellow that's accused of murdering his grandmother. It says, during Pomeroy's closing arguments Wednesday, he pointed to testimony he said supported premeditation, such as Levine telling a dental assistant in 2007 that throwing a body into the ocean would be a good way to hide evidence. He reminded jurors that a pastor said Levine told him Morro Bay Police Department has three police cars, but only two on duty. And this kind of brings me back to my working in the prison. And, you know, after a period of time, you get an idea of what prisoners talk about, what they do. And they don't talk about whether the Rams are going to need a new quarterback or how the Dodgers are going to do this year. they talk about where the easy spots to commit crimes are. And because of the three strikes law, it's imperative that they don't get caught doing felonies because they can be put away for life. So the big thing is, where's the soft spots? Where can they do crime and get away with it? Because that's the way of life that they know. I'm wholeheartedly in support of this. We need it. My only comment on this is I would like to see monies put away, say $30,000 a year. Well, see, I got to talk first. I got it. I read your notes. I'd like to see us prepare for that fourth year in advance, and so it's not going to hit us at one time for $120,000. So we can proportion that money out over a period of years, and when the time comes to pay up, boom, there it is. I'm not for putting any of the COP grant money toward that or earmarking it for that because of the unpredictability of such a grant. You can't depend on it, but I would like to see those plans put that way. I think we owe it to the officers. I think sometimes we ask them to be put in precarious situations above and beyond what they're supposed to do. I know that if I was an officer and I got a domestic complaint call, which is one of the most dangerous calls that you can get because of the unpredictability of the call, having limited information on the way out there and then arriving to a scene that is emotional, carries a lot of risk, and I wouldn't want to be a lone officer reporting to something like that. We owe it to our guys that protect us that we give them the tools and the personnel strength to adequately respond to these things. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Betty?
I would support this if the motion, Mr. Grantham's suggestion about the funding is started now. It's the only way I can support that in light of holding the line in other areas, not funding other positions in the city. And it's only equitable, I think, that we do that because that $119,000 makes me nervous in 4 years.
And I would ask that Betty does have a student waiting for her, so if we could all make our comments succinct. Noah, your turn.
I'm feeling the same way. Betty just basically summed me up.
Carla? All right. I agree. I'm in favor of this, and I also think that this is someplace where Measure Q money could go. Because we know it's a one-year thing. It's not a continued salary. But we could potentially use some Measure Q money to make that $35,000.
Yeah, I'm only frowning because I thought that was part of the Measure Q, that it could not go for salaries.
No, it's not a could not. It's we haven't chosen to if it was an ongoing, because we never knew if we could depend on it. But if it's something that we know it's just for 1 year that we have to cover, that would be a logical use for it.
I would not like to make that statement.
I'm not saying we should put it in the motion.
I don't think that was the intent of Measure Q for salary. I think we need to find another way to do it. That's just one of the challenges that confront us. We need to get the revenue to take care of these kind of things.
Okay. You want to make a motion?
So I'd like to make a motion that we move to approve the grant application for the federal. I talked to Susan Slayton this morning about it because I wanted to propose something that she could live with. And she felt that the 30 a year was appropriate, so that's really one reason I went with that.
Well, what budget is it going to come out of? The police department's, right?
Yeah.
So I would just think that the police chief would be able to. I just want to give him some discretionary room there to not make it so dictative, I guess. That's fine.
I think we're happy with the amount. We're gonna be coming back with a budget document, and in a couple of years, I mean, we're coming back every year with it, so I think that's fine.
All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Our second item is a support letter for AB 42. And whose was this? I'm sorry. Who brought this?
I think I agendized this. And I think it was that we want to support Mr. Blakesley, our assemblyman, in his moving forward a bill that just requests a study being done on the seismic activity out at the nuclear power plant.
Okay.
And there was a deadline coming up at the same night as our meeting, so we put it on the agenda for tonight.
Okay, and during the break, our city manager also suggested that since these bills often change as they go through the process, that we approve the letter as is, but also keep track of any updates or changes to it and bring it back if it changes significantly. Okay, so do I have a motion?
I would move approval of this letter and that staff keep track of it if there's no further discussion.
Second. Any more discussion?
Yeah, I have a question. Doesn't it say in here the hearing was March 23rd?
That was at a utility commission meeting, and now it's moved on to the Natural Resources Commission.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much for an efficient meeting.
You.